I'm the upper school chaplain at Parrish, and I've seen your faces here and there every now and again. My husband is a United Methodist pastor, and he is actually going back to school, or he has been going back to school full time to get master's in counseling, and he's going to be a licensed professional counselor and sort of combine both his call to ministry and his call to counseling and do pastoral counseling eventually. So we come here regularly. We sometimes find a Methodist church to hang out in on Sundays, so we try to balance that and let our children experience both. I have a 4.5-year-old who is a pre-K 2 kid over across the parking lot, and I have a 2.5-year-old who also talks nonstop regardless of what's happening around her. It could be a song, it could be conversation, it could be nothing, and she just talks the whole time. And she is over at the Midway campus with me in the Child Development Center over there, and she will hopefully be moving over to pre-K 1 next year. So we love this church and this school and all of those things. And I'd like to start with just kind of going around the room and your name and your age of your kid or kids, and also just kind of what you're like, what about this particular class you're hoping to figure out or learn about, or
remind me what this one's about.
It's called Fostering Evangelism in This Generation. So
I'm Melody Shove. My girls are 7 and 3.
I can, because you're teaching.
Oh, here I am.
I'm Jordan Teeple. My kids are 8, 6, and 16 months. And I'm wanting to learn how to foster evangelism in this generation.
I'm Louise Harms. I have an 8-year-old girl and a 5-year-old boy, and I'm really concerned. There's a lot of people in my neighborhood who send kids to my kids' schools that belong to churches that have views that I don't necessarily agree with. And so I know that my kids are going to get a lot of messages that probably are not consistent with what they learn here. So how can I work with that? And how can we talk about what we feel with kids and find common ground?
Thank you. Hi, I'm Amy Smith. I have 2 girls, 9 and 12. And I was just following friends in here. Yeah. Sounds like an interesting topic. So.
Angel Sanchez. I have 2 boys, 6 and 15 months. And really, I'm just trying to get some control of my boys, trying to set a good foundation for them for the future. I guess there's no time is too early, I suppose. So.
My name is Heather Newell, and I have a 10-year-old daughter. And
I didn't recognize you. I knew it. We've met before. Sorry.
She goes to a Catholic school and has a healthy dose of all things Catholic. She's grown up in an Episcopal church and will continue to do Episcopal church. But it's how does she? How do I help her sort through that and share what her beliefs are?
I'm Wendy Cohn. I'm married to him. We have 2 girls, 9 and 7. And what Louise said was exactly kind of what I was thinking. And also, just I like our community, and I came in here because I want to keep fostering that. So.
I'm Raquel Gornson. We have 3 boys, 12, 10, and 7. Kind of the same thing that Louise said, and I grew up in a very fundamental evangelical world, and so that kind of became a bad word. Like, evangelism to me just brings up all these yucky feelings. And so to kind of see it from a more positive light.
My name is Judy Harrell. And
she's not allowed to tell her children's name.
No. I'm here with my baby.
She's visiting. I'm Shannon Klingel. We have two boys. They are 5 and 4. And we come to every parenting class, so I don't miss them. Doesn't matter what the topic, we need help. So we'll take it wherever we can get it.
And I thought our kids are transitioning from going to a daycare that's at a church, so they have chapel every Wednesday, and so they have some good introduction and things throughout their school life, but now transitioning to public school where that isn't part of their life, and how do we keep that base that they got going?
Anything you want to add?
No, not really, other than that, you know, they've grown up here, so it's very normal for them, the whole Sunday school thing. I just, yeah, it'd be nice to, I like talking about ideas to continue that during the week, to your point. And not in a weird way, just in a, you know, just right. Make it normal part of life, you know, not making a big deal out of it. But.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just saying name and age of kids and why you decided to come to class. All right. Guilt brought me to class. No, my daughters are 13 and 10. And we live in a very conservative part of Collin County, so, you know, being involved and giving them the tools to talk about their faith with their friends who are all very Baptist is important to us. Okay, excellent. So is 13 the oldest? How old? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, fun times talking about what this generation is, because I didn't know what it was until Mother Erin asked me to help with this class. Because we have, you know, the hottest topic generation right now is millennials, which is that generation sort of just under us. I actually am right on the cusp of Gen X and millennials, and I tend to identify with both. I have 3 older brothers, and actually I have step-siblings also who are all older than me. I'm the youngest of everybody, so I have very much, like, been influenced by sort of, you know, like, angsty alternative music and, you know, all those things. Like, Eddie Vedder was, like, everything to me. And, like, you know, just all that. But then I also, because I'm kind of on this, on the cusp, I relate a lot to, well, quite frankly, a lot of the students that I work with at Parrish. And I did youth ministry before chaplaincy. And then I did full-time motherhood, too, which was not for me. So for any of you out there who are full-time mommies, God bless you. Or full-time daddies, as the case may be. It is probably the hardest job I've ever had, and I hope that I don't ever have it again. I'm sorry. It was so hard, y'all. Anyway, so this generation is this, it's, they're not really sure what they're going to be called yet. Some people are calling them the founders. Some people are calling them the builders.
Very Forbes-like.
Yeah, Forbes magazine did like a whole article on it. We don't really know what they're called. We don't really know exactly who they're going to be, but I bet if each of us sat down and sort of described some things about our kids, we would find a lot of commonalities that are most likely attributed to generational differences, right? So a lot of times, you know, you can characterize these groups by the life experiences they've had, you know, baby boomers having parents who lived through the Great Depression, things like that. Like, there's very sort of common things that have happened in lives, and those affect how people engage in the world. And so that's what we're dealing with this generation, that part of what this class is. Fostering evangelism. So, yeah, evangelism often is a dirty word, especially in the Episcopal Church. Us Episcopalians tend to just want to, like, go to church, and it's not even, like, a checklist thing, because I really feel like, particularly younger generations, when we come, there's something that's that mystical element of it that really, really speaks to us, really touches our souls, really makes us want to be a part of this community. It really draws something out of us as well as puts something into us. So I don't want it to sound like a checkbox at all, But I do sometimes think that, you know, Episcopalians, we just kind of, like, want to come in and do our thing and then go on about our business. And, like, if people want to talk about Jesus, we're like, yeah, we'll listen. But we don't always want to just, like, jump into the conversation and be like, let me tell you about him. Yeah. He's amazing, you know. And when we do find Episcopalians like that, we're like, you got this handled, so I'm out. I think I actually found this quote. I think the one thing that is probably the most powerful way that I've heard evangelism described, because evangelism really is just basically, you know, we telling somebody about this amazing thing that you found in God, you know, through Jesus. And so there was a Methodist pastor called D.T. Niles who wrote, evangelism is one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. And I think that's so true, because as we, particularly as Episcopalians, when we approach the altar, we don't take communion, we receive it. And the way that we receive it is as a person begging. We hold our hands out. We are begging for God's grace and mercy and love and all of the things that come with that. And so I think that that's really powerful, a really powerful image. And as Mother Erin and I were talking about this a few days back, she said, you know, when I found these really great shoes, I was willing to tell everybody who said, hey, I really like your shoes. Like, Clark's got a 2 for $99 sale. Like, you should go check it out, you know? And she said, but when it comes to us talking to people about Jesus, about our salvation, about, you know, all these things that are so important to us, really, that we're like, because there is sort of a stigma, you know? We don't want to be sort of like televangelists. You know, we don't want that cheesy factor to it. We want it to be authentic to who we are. We also want to not frighten people, probably because we ourselves have been frightened by people before. Who in here has had the "what day were you saved" conversation with a scary person, maybe trying to hand you a tract? Or
you said you grew up fundamentalist evangelical. I grew up Southern Baptist, same thing. Are there Southern Baptists in the group, or anybody that, or are y'all all cradle custodians?
No. My father was, and then I grew up in a really tiny community where that, like, everyone was, and we were not. Mm-hmm. Like, and my father was very adamant about not being one. I would go to fifth quarter and try to get saved. And I'm like, oh, no.
I went to fifth quarter, too. And when they tried to save me, I was like, oh, Mom, I gotta leave. My ride's here.
I did. I called my parents to come pick me up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It made my Catholic friend cry. Like, when we went to a Baptist church for Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and she literally was in tears by what they were saying to her.
I was crying out that Catholics were not Christians.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. What did you just say?
I grew up that Catholics are not Christians.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow.
People would tell me that all the time. Yeah. We worshipped Mary, mm-hmm. and that yep. we had a lot of false idols in our church, and we were not Christians.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot. And then my mom is Brazilian and my dad's American, and we were always told that that was very sinful because you shouldn't marry outside of your culture.
Ooh.
Ooh. This was the church that we grew up in.
Wow.
They still went there. Even though they were being told this?
They did. And they that was one that my parents would come home and they would say, that's how they believe. That's not how we believe. That's not how our family functions, blah, blah, blah. But we would still go to the church, yeah.
Wow.
I had someone tell me, because I was baptized as a child, that it didn't count. Like, I had to, ask.
Do it again.
Yes. Because I didn't ask. It didn't count.
This summer, Libby went to Pine Cove. It's a very conservative country. I had multiple conversations before she went about how you've known Jesus since the birth. And I get there and she goes, I accepted Jesus in my heart. And I go, well, he's been there forever. So I'm glad you did. But,
that's a good answer, though.
Yeah, I said, he's always been there. Yeah. But okay, you know. Like, but it was like, we went over this. I was so adamant. I covered all of it. Yes. But as a kid, though, I would grew up Episcopalian. And, you know, the Episcopal Church wasn't great in the 70s and 80s about Christian formation for kids. And I remember going to, like, some of these, you know, even in college, you know, groups, and their whole big thing was, like, you have to, like, pronounce your faith, and you have to accept Jesus in your heart now. It doesn't count from when you were baptized. It's just like...
Yeah, that's
and they had me convinced my mom was going to hell. My mom's a Catholic and not really practicing, and it's just like, oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, that's when I like to be like, well, I do every Sunday. It's called the Nicene Creed, and I say it every week and sometimes every day if I get up early enough to do the daily office. Yeah, it's really hard. So when I was doing hospital chaplaincy as a part of my ordination requirements, there was like a group of teenagers who were like running through Parkland Hospital trying to save people. And I was like, what are you doing? And who, like, did somebody give you permission to be here? Do you have an adult with you? Like, you know, I mean, I was just like, and they're like, I mean, they're following the chaplains around even, like asking us if we have done these things too. Like, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord?
Like, no, it's your job. I don't remember the exact details, but it was involving the Mormon Church, and the Mormon Church had found out that people were baptizing, like, everybody as Mormons. So if you went to the registry or, you know, looked up whatever it was, you could find, like, Ray Charles as a Mormon and all of these random celebrities and people that they were just claiming to make sure that they were in their domain. It's kind of like that. You know, just running up and down the hallway saying, come on!
Yeah, that is really interesting. So yeah, I mean, we've all had these experiences, and so evangelism in and of itself is kind of one of those things that we shy away from because it does feel like a very hostile thing, you know, even if it's not a bad thing. You know, we know at its root it's a good thing. It's something that we should all do. You know, in Matthew at the end of the gospel, we hear the Great Commission. We hear things in the prophets about how we need to be living our lives in a way that demonstrates our faith and telling people about why we're doing it. You know, all of these things that we should be doing to tell people about the love of God. And so we know that it's something we should do, but again, we sort of tend to shy away from it because maybe our own personal experiences, or the fear of coming across as, like, I know that, who was it? Was it DC Talk or somebody, like, back in the 90s had that song, Jesus Free?
Jesus Free.
I don't even know it, but I just know that, you know, it was like a thing. But to not come across as this person who's just so insanely...
Like crazy Christians.
Right, right. So insanely Christians. Zealous that we really do freak people out. I mean...
But that's so, the title of the presiding bishop's book, Crazy Christians.
Oh, it is.
Presiding Bishop Michael Curry, who is... an awesome evangelist, is kind of trying to reclaim that as an Episcopal identity.
I think that Christianity needs to be reclaimed. I think that's part of the problem. Like, that is part of the issue. I don't want, when I talk about my church, I want to go, oh, but we're not crazy. Like, we're normal. Like, we're normal. Yeah,
I feel like I always have to say I'm an Episcopalian. Like, I don't even say I'm a Christian. I'm an Episcopalian because I don't want to be associated with other churches.
Well, and all the stuff in the news about Watermark. I live in a Watermark neighborhood, so it's...
I think we all live in a Watermark neighborhood. It's physically impossible to get away from it.
I mean, because they used to...
They used to
meet at Lake Collins High School. And so all these...
Well,
and
it's right around the corner.
Yeah, I know.
And
oh, yeah. And when all this stuff came out about...
They were going through...
They're shaming, and... I mean, I just want to go... And come to our church, please. Just come, because we accept people where others aren't fine. But then it's like I feel like that's so me too.
Yeah. I think that's my struggle, is having grown up like that. I don't want to be that judgy. Mm-hmm. But when my kids come home and they're like, "Oh, so and so invited me to youth at Watermark." Thank goodness my oldest is now at youth here. And I'm like, well, but our church has a youth group. You can go visit, but this is our church. Mm-hmm. But I struggle with how to say that and not sound like, I really don't want you to go to that church.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I don't, everybody needs to find their way. And I think God speaks to us differently, and we need to be accepting of it. I just struggle with being kind about it, I guess.
Right. And also giving them the foundation to stand up. So whenever they do hear a peer say something about
a gay person
or something, for my children to have the authority, I guess, or something to be like...
The confidence.
What are you talking yeah. about? Like, no, God loves all people. And you know, because I don't know if I had that.
I think this church is excellent at teaching that. Sophie had taught her Sunday school and her class at church when she's going to like a preschool class at school. They were doing the story of Ruth, and she was all excited about Ruth being there. It was about a girl or whatever. And basically... they talked about Ruth marrying her husband, and Sophie just basically said, well, you know, a boy can marry a boy and a girl can marry a girl. Yes. And then they're like, so the teacher's like, so I said, that is true. This mm-hmm. is before gay marriage. I said, well, that is how what we believe. That's our church. And she said, she goes, oh, well, my sister's a lesbian. I'm fine with whatever. I just want you to know that you're raising a feminist. You're raising someone who's going to stick up for people's rights. And I was like, yeah! And my church is helping raise them.
Yeah. So I think that, what are some of the characteristics that you notice among your children that could sort of describe them as a, for all of our children, as kind of a group or a whole? Because, like, millennials kind of get this bad rap, right? Like, they're lazy and they're all of these things. They're entitled. They're all of these things. But I've seen a lot of articles lately about people sort of coming to the defense of the millennials. And so I know that our kids aren't in that general sense. I have kids, you know, and dogs. It washes in the machine. Thank God. But, like, you know, what are some of those things that you've, like, I know that my children, and sometimes I just think it's because they're girls, and sometimes I think it's because they're my husband's. But they're very, like, you know, stubborn. I don't know if y'all have found that to be true with your own children.
Strong-willed,
yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
Very. That's part of the reason we're all here.
Right.
We're all here just with the shades.
Yeah, very strong-willed.
Yeah. I think the self-confident, right? I mean, I think,
yeah.
That leads them to be strong-willed.
Well, because we're always telling them how wonderful they are.
Yeah. And they're secure. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah. much more secure than I think I ever was or have been. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they're just like, I'm this person. And I'm like, okay.
My two, I think at their ages, 2.5 and 4.5, I feel like my 4.5-year-old is about as empathetic as she can be developmentally. Like, for the most part, she still wants to hang out with her, you know, 4 or 5 friends that she is in class with all the time. And she is kind of at that, getting to that point where she sees division and she has a preference, but she doesn't really understand why. And she also doesn't necessarily want to change anything about it. You know, again, developmentally, that seems appropriate to me. But my 2.5-year-old is, like, the most compassionate person I've ever met in my entire life. She will go up to all of the kids. Any kid in her daycare who's crying, anything that's happening, she goes up and is, like, hugging them and, like, you know, do you need a Band-Aid? Can I get you a boo-boo ice? Like she wants to help them figure out what's wrong. You know, like, she is just... And I'm like, I don't know how that happens. Because I feel like there's some things that you can teach. You know, like you can teach, you can teach these things. But, I mean, at that age, and she's been like that her entire life.
Both of my girls, all of their teachers have always said that about mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. Like, to Libby, it can be a detriment. Like, the girl was in the wheelchair, and she, like, didn't want to leave her side. Because, you know, she might need help.
Right.
You know, we had to have the talk.
So we wanted to adopt every one of those kids in the World Vision.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, honey.
I think like there's a world consciousness element too, because mm-hmm. they've grown up in a global
mm-hmm.
The world is so much smaller and bigger than it was when we grew up.
Yeah.
You can talk to anybody in the world on FaceTime, mm-hmm. and they do.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, like, they have that wider consciousness that maybe we didn't get until much later on in life.
Oh yeah.
But I also think it's partly about parenting, that the Gen X and millennial parents have moved away from success as the sole, as the greatest measure of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not just in the church, but in the wider society, we're starting to see people who say, like, kindness matters more mm-hmm. than getting the best grades.
Hey, Sesame Street, just the whole thing on empathy and how that's all parents said it was, like, way more important than the empathy. Their children have empathy than smarts.
Mm-hmm. And the millennial generation wasn't taught that. I mean, that's what the studies show, is that millennials believe their parents think it's more important that they be successful than they be kind.
Yeah.
And that as a response to that, I think many of us are raising our kids saying, no, no, it's more important that you be kind mm-hmm. than you be successful.
I think we're also...
We're trying.
Yeah, just
on our best days.
No expectations.
I think a lot of us are trying to raise our children to be individuals and kind of like be themselves.
Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking, I don't think any of our parents have meetings like this, right? So we give them so much attention, attention that I never got, that's for sure. And also they never let me be an individual per se, aside from the fact that I was always out on my own, you know, kind of like playing in the woods or whatever. But, you know, there were always these rules that I grew up in the Catholic Church too, and I'm not saying this because of it that we had these rules, but I felt like I couldn't kind of grow and be who I wanted to be in certain aspects of my life. But I'm thinking that the individuality is more of an issue now than it used to be.
I think one thing that's really going to be a difference for this generation is the idea that men are involved in raising families.
Oh, that's a great point.
I think that's very true.
I mean, I talked to my dad, and he's like, I had four kids. I never changed a diaper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
To this day, when he sees James, like, actively parenting like he's supposed to,
mm-hmm.
yeah. He's like, gosh, he's awfully involved. I'm like, well, yeah, he was there when they started. I mean, he might as well be
without him.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a big difference, especially as they get older. Because, both of our girls just
absolutely.
Have no yeah. concept of...
But I think that's universal. It's not just your family. Like, it's
sure.
everyone's.
Mm-hmm.
I know my mom was talking about some first person was bragging about her son and how wonderful he is. And my mom looked at her and said, that's this generation. Like, that he, if he didn't do that, everybody would look at him. And that's why every now and then you hear about that parent that doesn't do anything. And you're like... Get away with this! Are you crazy?
Oh,
you know?
God.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care that he works full time. So do you? Like, you know.
Gender roles as a whole have
mm-hmm.
changed,
mm-hmm.
like
yeah.
completely. And I'm a Gen Xer, so certainly from when I was a little girl to what I see my nieces seeing that little girls can become is a whole different,
mm-hmm.
whole different world.
Mm-hmm.
And for my boys too. To I remember when we were choosing pediatricians. I intentionally, we have all boys, but I didn't find out until they were born. But when we were choosing pediatricians, I specifically wanted a minority or a woman
mm-hmm.
because I wanted them to see the world differently. And I don't know if a lot of Gen Xers did that, but mm-hmm. that was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of my friends are like that. So I think, I hope my boys grow to see the world more equal.
Mm-hmm.
And just even, I know kind of off topic, but the whole topic of rape, as a little girl, we were taught... You can't do this. You can't go here. You need to care. I mean, I remember going off to college, and my parents had my first cell phone and a pepper spray and teaching me where I could walk on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like the shift is no is no is no.
Mm-hmm.
She can be walking naked, and you can't touch her if she
mm-hmm.
says no. And so the shift has changed it to the responsibility of the man. It's not the woman to protect herself. It's the man to leave her alone. And I think that's this generation too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's
if we're raising the boys that way.
I think it's
we're
a slow, long shift.
Yeah.
But permanent change comes along slowly.
Yeah, it takes like I think it's 17 miles to turn an aircraft carrier 180 degrees. So that's a good analogy. That's a really helpful analogy
yeah.
for me in every aspect of my life. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sort of like behavior change with the children, like this is gonna take 5 years. You know,
you think that you're like this.
Yeah.
Did I just turn? I mean, I've started.
right. So I found some interesting stuff. Speaking of generations and some things on the Pew Research Foundation, and it says this is from 2007 to 2014, so it's a 7 year gap between the studies. About a third of older millennials, adults currently in their late 20s and early 30s, now say that they have no religion, up to 9 percentage points among this cohort, up 9 percentage points since 2007. Nearly a quarter of Gen Xers now say they have no particular religion or describe themselves as atheists or agnostics, up 4 percentage points from 2007. And baby boomers also have become slightly but noticeably more likely to identify as religious nuns, which is, you know, like when you choose your religion nun, in recent years. And so I just thought that was really interesting because, you know, for so many of sort of our older, like I know my parents, my mom is like,
I mean, I just don't know how these kids are not getting to church these days. Oh gosh, that's they're recording this. but you know, for boomers and above, you know, it's this disconnect between, you know, like there's a reason why so many people of that generation beyond think that we still live in a Christian nation, because they grew up that way. And they still, for the most part, attend church regularly. You know, I mean, there's all this kind of stuff.
It's living in the South, though, too. I think we kind of feel that way a little bit, because living in the South. But, I mean, you go other places. I'm sure if you looked at the division, that's where it's huge.
Right, right. There's a huge shift. And so I get to teach a class called The Bible and Western Culture at school. And one of the things I love to do is sort of bust their bubble about what it actually means to be in this country with freedom of religion. It doesn't mean you get to go to whatever Christian denomination church you want to. It means that you can go to any kind of religious service that you want to, or none at all, and nobody's going to come persecute you for not going, or for going to picking one or over the other, you know. And our nation's founders were deists, you know. They believed in sort of a God who had set everything in motion and then kind of took a step back, you know. And so it's just really interesting to see that generational gap. And also, I totally think that you're right. It depends on geography and upbringing and, you know, are you north or south of the Mason-Dixon line? You know, I mean, just all of these things that definitely contribute. But I do think that there is sort of an interesting shift there, even in boomers. You know, like, why are they not going to church more? What's going on with that? You know, I know that some of them are at or beyond retirement age. You know, like, what are these factors that come into it? Or what about that shift qualifies them as none? They've moved from something to none, you know? And so that's a really interesting just kind of thing to keep in mind, is that it appears as though throughout our country in general, like, the religious nuns are increasing, while those who would pick a denomination or a religion in general are decreasing. And so I think partially that speaks to the sort of urgency, like, we do need to do something. But I also think it kind of speaks to how our culture perceives evangelism, and how our culture perceives sort of this... what we see, I mean, honestly, in the news every day, we have two very different extremes almost all the time on any topic, any issue. You know, I like to, when I'm talking about stuff like this, I like to say that, you know, like for example, this is in no way, shape, or form to intended to start a conversation on pro-life, pro-choice, but this is an example I like to use, is that, you know, there's pro-life and there's pro-choice, and everybody thinks that those are the two extremes. You can only be one or the other. You can't be in the middle. And I like to think to myself, well, no, I think the spectrum is broader than that, because there's not anyone who's pro-abortion, right? Like, I don't think many people would say, like, yes, let's abort all the fetuses. You know, like, there's no, I mean, at least no person who would be qualified as mentally stable who would say that. Do you know what I mean? And so when we think about these issues where we think that these are the polar opposites and you're either with us or you're against us, and that's a really dangerous place to be. And I know as Episcopalians, we tend to like to be in the middle on a lot of things. A lot of Episcopalians say, like, oh, I'm just kind of moderate. And that's that's kind of true. Like, we have some of these over here, and we have some of these over here, and we have some of these all through here. And so it's hard for us to sometimes perfectly define where we are, because we have all these different thoughts and feelings about all the different issues. And so for Episcopalians, we love being in what we call the via media, the middle way. And that, for the Episcopal Church, has been the most long-standing way of being Episcopalian, particularly in this country. And so I think that, okay, we have to stop soon. But I think that some of the things that we can talk about in this class are, like, how do we teach our kids to see that gray in a world where, generally speaking, at least what gets projected out you know, from news media, from social media, from these other avenues and outlets is these really extreme views. Because that's what makes money. That's what gets people clicking and talking and responding and updating their status or Snapchatting about it or whatever it is, you know? And so it's these really extreme views that we have to sort of teach them to, like, okay, we can go and we can look at them and we can, you know, we can approach them, we can talk about them, we can wrestle with them, we can engage with them, we can do all this stuff. But I think some of this has to do with church and how we as Episcopalians understand things like marriage, like family, some of these really hot button issues, right? And teach them that there are ways in the middle too, and that we can be who we are and still honor other people where they are, but not necessarily just become like them one way or the other. So I don't know exactly how we're going to do that, because I'm learning all the time too. But I think that the more that we talk about it and some of the ideas that we're able to share with each other, we will definitely learn some helpful ways. And I know that for my own life, my children are like little tiny mirrors that I look at every day. Most of the time, I feel like what I see in the mirror is not something I want to see in the mirror. And so those are some things, too, that we can look at as we are parenting and as we are discussing some of these hot-button topics and some of these issues, particularly over dinner or something that comes up in conversation. They're just little tiny sponges, and they're just showing us everything that we say and do all the time. And same thing for the other adults and their friends in their lives, too, right? Their teachers. You know, everything that they absorb, they reflect back to us. And some of the things that we see are from us, and some of them are from other people. And y'all know what I'm talking about. Like, when they come home saying words, and you're like, where did you learn that? You know? But I do think that we, as parents, obviously have a lot of say in what they learn from us. And so that's kind of where I think we're heading next week in particular, is to kind of delve into some of these things and maybe do a little bit of self-reflection on our part, because as you guys were saying earlier, like, we don't want them to think that those people are bad people. We just don't necessarily want them to go off and join Watermark like next week, because that's where their friends are going. Yes.
And they have a rock wall.
Yeah. They have a giant tree house too. Yeah. I really want to go over there in my collar. Hey, we should have a play date one day. We'll dress up in our collars. Take our strong-willed daughters. No, but thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We'll just keep on keeping on next week. And I was going to show y'all a fun video clip. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Saved. There's a point in the... I was just going to show you the trailer because it kind of runs the gamut. But there's a point in the movie where Mandy Moore's character, like, literally throws a Bible at the protagonist in the movie and, like, hits her with it. And she's like, just... Jesus loves you, or so, like, literally throws a Bible at her, and I was like, so that's what not to do. So hopefully I'll remember to bring my computer next week, and we'll have a little bit more mixed media to guide our conversation. So thank you guys for being here.
Thank you
so much.